ready to start. Welcome, everybody. Thanks for coming along on a it is Sunday, isn't it? Sunday afternoon to this this meeting. There's got a couple of sections. We've got the first section is Stand with Palestine, ending the UK support for genocide in Gaza, and the second half we'll be talking about the war in Ukraine. We find ourselves in a very, very dispiriting moment, I think, in history at the moment. I find it very difficult to even switch on the TV, radio, or the news or anything like that. In fact, I haven't listened to anything this morning, but I'm pretty certain that Israel will have killed some children overnight, because that's the sort of circumstance we find ourselves in. So we're about 12 months on, aren't we, since the October the 7th, and the appalling situation that there is, or there has been, continues to be in Gaza, spread to the West Bank, and then now into Lebanon, with Israel appearing to be a law unto itself internationally. But there has been, that we have been pushing back, we have been building a movement. The Muslim Association of Britain, CND, Friends of Al-Aqsa, Palestine Forum of Britain, together with Stop the War Coalition and the Palestine Solidarity Campaign, have organised 19 massive demonstrations for Palestine over the past 12 months, nine of which people from coaches from Newcastle have gone down to attend. So I think that's been a supreme effort across the country to keep up that level of resistance. So we're hoping to talk a little bit about that and how we move things forward this morning. We've got two speakers. We're going to speak for 10 or 15 minutes each, and then we'll open things up for questions. We've got Jason Hussain, who's the current co-chair of Newcastle Palestine Solidarity Campaign. And to start off, we've got Alex Snowden, who's the secretary of Northumberland National Education Union. So we'll sit back and have a listen, and then we'll have some questions and discussion afterwards. Alex.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you. I'll stick to about 10 minutes, partly because I'm struggling with a cold at the moment, so I will do my best with this. But I am a teacher and an activist in the National Education Union. I'm very aware that it's Sunday today and back in work tomorrow, but enjoy the retirement. working with children every day. And Tony's point really hit home with me about pretty much every day you see more children are being killed. Another school has been hit that was being used for sheltering Palestinians in Gaza. And what I want to start with really is just how bleak it was earlier in September, when at the same time as we were going back to school for a new term, for a new academic year after the summer holidays, was realising that in Gaza nobody, absolutely nobody, is going back to school. Education ceased pretty much many months ago. many teachers, of course, have been killed. Thousands upon thousands of school children have been killed. Hundreds of school buildings have been destroyed altogether, and hundreds more have been bombed and damaged. All 12 universities in Gaza have been destroyed, and no university students. This is in a very Palestinian population, is famously a very well-educated population, with a great passion for education as a community, and a huge number of Palestinians gone to university, but university education has been suspended. And the long-term impact of that will be absolutely enormous and traumatic for decades to come. And, of course, it's not just about the impact on schools and education. That symbolises the sheer scale and the scope of the genocide. And it is correct to talk about it as a genocide. And I think in the midst of all this destruction and horror, one political advance of the last year, as we reflect on a year of genocide, is that it has become widely accepted in the international community, if you like, that this is genocide. And a further implication of that is that for all governments with relations with Israel, including our own, a very direct relationship with Israel, that has serious implications. And that states and governments need to be addressing the issue of their own complicity in genocide. So when we reflect, we are coming up to the first anniversary. One of the things to reflect on is what's happening on the ground in Gaza and what's happening in Israel. but also the way in which this has changed British politics and Britain's complicity in what is happening, but also more optimistically for us and more in a more empowering way for us as activists in this country, what the role is for the solidarity movement here, for trade unions here, for the anti-war movement, in not simply opposing what Israel is doing, but challenging our own government. So they're the things I just want to briefly comment on in these sort of introductory remarks. One thing to note is the scale of the genocide has been far beyond anything we could have imagined last autumn. I think last October, it was very difficult for all of us who've been active around Palestine for a long time to think about where is this going, where is this heading? But the main reference point was 2014, when in the summer of 2014, Israel had a military assault on Gaza that lasted 7 weeks and killed 2,000 Palestinians. And it quickly became clear this is going to last longer and it's going to kill even more thousands of Palestinians. What I don't think anyone anticipated was that it would still be happening now and that we'd have 40,000 deaths and rising. Many, many more from secondary effects as well, not directly killed, from disease and so on. Now, that's the first thing to note about it. But also, Israel has not won. It's not the case that it has had particular strategic aims and it has achieved those aims. I don't think it has a coherent strategy. I think it lurches from crisis to crisis. But in as much as they have any sort of aims, if you were to look at what top government politicians are thinking, and you dig a little bit deeper than their public pronouncements, and you think, what are they really aiming for here? If anything, I think their vision is that Gaza will be absolutely obliterated and there will be some sort of puppet administration that is complicit with the US, complicit with Israel, it's very compliant and acquiescent, that will somehow rule over things. Hamas will be completely obliterated, any sort of resistance will be destroyed, and so on. They haven't particularly achieved those aims, and they're not going to achieve those aims. And it's very clear that there's a stalemate there. So you're in a situation where Israel has unleashed terrible horror, but it is not the case that in military terms or strategic terms, whatever, that it has somehow won or inflicted a defeat on the Palestinians. We've also seen them escalate the violence in the West Bank, which is very serious to take account of, but also increasingly in the wider region. One of the things that we should be wary of when thinking about the first anniversary of the genocide, while it's important to take account of, is that this is, of course, in the bigger context of the Israeli oppression of the Palestinians that goes back to the ethnic cleansing of Palestine in 1948, that goes back to the Balfour Declaration in 1917. There's a huge amount of history here. And there's always a danger of getting too narrowly focused just on the last year. And I think when you look at what's happening now in relation to Hezbollah and Lebanon, one thing that we should keep in mind there as well is there's a huge amount of history. Yeah, Israel has been in one form or another in conflict with Lebanon, and specifically with Hezbollah, for decades. And it fits into that broader history. It also fits into its broader conflict with Iran and America's conflict with Iran as well. So there are a number of different forces, including Hezbollah and Hamas, that I think the Israelis and the American elites as well see as being closely allied with Iran. So it's part of that broader strategic picture. And we often talk about the threat of a wider regional war, but in a sense, that's already happening. We've seen about 700 people in Lebanon killed just in the last week. We have seen very serious assassinations of Hamas and Hezbollah leaders based in Lebanon, Syria and Iran. We've seen targeted strikes on other countries in the region. So there is a kind of ongoing regional war which threatens to escalate even further. And finally, in terms of what's happening on the ground, I think another thing to acknowledge is that Israel is not simply acting in isolation. When you look at the entire history of Israel's treatment of the Palestinians in the occupied territories, including Gaza, but also Israel's aggression towards other territories, in particular Lebanon during the 80s and beyond, the US has always been deeply complicit in that. There has always been a very, very close relationship between Israel and the US. That continues. That remains. And it remains the case that Israel can only do much of what it does because it has American backing. It is also the case that there is more tension between them than I think there has ever been. And certainly behind the scenes, even if it's not often expressed publicly, we know that there's been a lot of deep concern in Washington from Biden and people around him with what Israel is doing, a lot of difficult conversations, but ultimately still publicly backing, still arming Israel, still supporting Israel, and that relationship is absolutely critical. Now, the next thing I want to just comment on is Britain's role in all of this. It's important to remember Britain has always supported Israel, going right back to 1948. It doesn't depend on the particular government, Tory or Labour, or whatever particular Prime Minister or Foreign Secretary you've got. That is something that's consistent over time. And in fact, goes back to the Balfour Declaration in 1917. You can only understand the development of Zionism, the development of Israel, in that context. So there is a very long history of a special relationship there. We saw before the general election, we had a Tory government that was almost entirely uncritical in backing Israel. There were particular things they did that, of course, they criticised. But in the context of reiterating constantly, Israel are our partners, Israel are our allies, we support Israel's right to self-defence, and so on and so forth. That wasn't a great surprise, really, was it? What shocked a lot more people and horrified a lot more people was how awful the Labour front bench were in largely echoing and saying the same things. And when it came to crucial parliamentary votes on a potential ceasefire, how awful its position was. What we now see in government, unsurprisingly, given what we saw Labour doing in opposition, is it largely continuing the same policies as before. There have been a couple of U-turns, and those U-turns have been the things where the Tory government was particularly horrific and particularly extreme. Cutting UNRWA funding was a particularly obscene thing to do. It's very good that that cut has been reversed, but frankly that is a very, very low bar to pass given how inhumane and cruel a policy that was. Revoking some of the export licences is a very good step forward. It is a small fraction of Britain's military relationship and arms trade with Israel. Those U-turns have only come about not through benevolence but through mass pressure from the movement. So even those small changes, I think we need to recognise, are not because of some sort of benevolence from the government but because of the mass solidarity movement. And I think the issue of the arms trade has become particularly central, and we should really talk about that and focus on that in our campaigning, is to break that relationship. Because for every single day that continues, that means that our government, who are accountable to us, are directly complicit in the killing of Palestinians day after day after day in an ongoing genocide. So there's a fundamental moral question there and political question there in terms of British complicity. So we have to step up the campaigning around that. And just before I comment on what we can do and sort of you know, what our priorities are, I'll just say, I think in the general election, we did see evidence of that political crisis for Labour. Because even though Labour had merely been in opposition before July the 4th, and wasn't actually in government, there was still a massive backlash, and I think justifiably a massive backlash against its support and complicity in the genocide. You saw five independent pro-Palestine candidates elected, including Jeremy Corbyn, in the election. But you also saw, I think there were 17 seats where independent candidates came second, overwhelmingly on a pro-Palestine platform, and in some cases came close to defeating Labour MPs. That was a phenomenal political backlash. And I think that was a massive wake-up call for many in the incoming government, that there is a cost for them in having the positions that they have in being broadly supportive of Israel. Final thing is about what we do in terms of the anti-war movement, the solidarity movement, in particular the trade unions. One thing to acknowledge over the last year is the importance of a national mass movement. Tony referred to 19 national demonstrations. That's an extraordinary level of mass mobilisation. And some of these demonstrations have run into hundreds of thousands of people. They have been huge. This is a movement that has reached into the corner of every corner of British society. Everyone has been involved. That needs to continue. We need to continue that orientation on mass mobilisation and mass activity. The trade unions have supported that and been involved in that. I think we also need to acknowledge the weaknesses there. It's been a very mixed picture. I think there are a couple of obstacles we've come up against in the union movement. One is the fact that there's a layer of trade union leaders and a layer of trade unionists who are quite loyal to Starmer and don't want to rock the boat. So in some unions, particularly affiliated unions to the Labour Party, there's been a reluctance to challenge the Labour leadership too much, which I think has weakened the trade union input to the movement. And the other argument is the one about jobs. So in Unite in particular, which is one of the biggest trade unions in the country, there are members of Unite who work in the arms industry, and you get this argument that, oh, we can't possibly oppose the arms trade because that would lose our members' jobs. I think ultimately we need to challenge that, and we need to talk about things like a just transition. We need to talk about the fact that you can transition from things like the arms industry and fossil fuel industries towards much more socially useful and environmentally friendly jobs. Those workers' skills can be used for things that are not complicit in genocide and killing people. We need to take those sorts of arguments on, but that has been an obstacle. But there was a very good motion which came from the NEU at the TUC conference recently, and also a motion from UCU, the University Lecturers Union, putting anti-war positions, and both of those motions were passed at the TUC. So there is debate going on there, and there are tensions under the surface, but there is also a broad agreement in the union movement about where we stand on Palestine, and there have been trade union blocks in the demonstrations, trade union contingents, trade union banners. I think we need to do more. I think we need to translate that TUC motion into getting far more trade union members on the demonstrations. Final thing in terms of what we do is I do think that we need to broaden out in the sense of what we are talking about. We need to be relentlessly focused on what's happening in Gaza. We need to keep mobilising around that. But as a number of demonstrations recently have started to do, we need that broader regional focus as well. So part of the focus for the demonstration next Saturday in London, the next national demonstration in London is next Saturday, is saying no to a regional war, no to the killings in Lebanon, and so on. That is, I think, increasingly important, that is part of our perspective, that we're mobilising specifically around Gaza, but that we are also challenging war and militarism and aggression in the wider region. I'll stop there, I think.
Thanks, Alex. That was a very good broad introduction to what's going on. I think it's one of the key things that I think you pointed to was the complicity. I think we sort of come to expect some complicity from governments around these sort of things. But I think it has shocked people, the level of complicity and support from not only a Labour Party but a Labour government now, in a way that perhaps people wouldn't have expected. You only have to go back to 2019 Labour conference, and there was a mass of Palestinian flags at the conference. So there's been a complete shift, sort of, in the Labour Party, and I think that has made people very disappointed as to what's going on. We know from the polls that the majority of people in this country from the very beginning were wanting to call a ceasefire and do want to stop arming Israel. So it is disappointing, and I think we need to talk about how we further that opposition and build for further stopping of the arms, despite the minor concessions that have been made.